Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Coming up on this weekend edition, a check of a couple of headlines going on. See what's going on in the news today. Also, an interesting historical note to look at, as well as taking a look at this great booklet we've been looking at this week. God is a Family ties into the historical note, actually, so it's kind of an interesting tie-in. We'll take a look at that and more coming up on this weekend edition of Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live at 101.3 KPCG and online at thetrumpet.com. We have a live link there as well. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here today. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, please do that at KPCGFM. And any emails you'd like to send, send those along. Comments at kpcg.fm. Did you have a nice Thanksgiving, Grant?
It was really, really nice. Relaxing. Kind of productive compared to most holidays, so it was a good time.
Yeah, wonderful. Beautiful weather here, too, in central Oklahoma, and we just had a great day yesterday in terms of the weather, and beautiful today, nice weekend on the way, so we don't have a lot to complain about here. I don't know what it's like in town. I'm sure it's crazy, and one thing I'm very thankful for is that my drive to work has very little traffic. All of the year, but particularly this time of the year when you know there's a lot of people going around and doing all their different things in town. It's nice to not have to be in the quagmire, if you choose not to be, and I choose not to be.
Yeah, we're kind of on the edges, so everyone's in the middle of town, and we're on the outskirts with no one to get in our way whatsoever. It's probably like a ghost town where you live right now.
Yeah, whenever there's holidays, yeah, people aren't going to work, and so it's pretty easy getting around. My phone always updates me on the traffic, and which is ridiculous because I don't need that here. But it's, every day it'll say, like, you know, traffic's light today, or traffic, which basically means either I'll see no one on the way to work or I'll pass a car. that's the difference between heavy traffic and light traffic. A couple of headlines to take a look at today. Well, this is a story happening that's bad situations from Fox News. There's a terror attack in Egypt. Egypt mosque attack leaves at least 235 dead. That number has been going up throughout the day. Islamist militants are suspected of orchestrating the attack on a Sufi mosque in Egypt's volatile Sinai Peninsula on Friday, killing at least 235 people and injuring more. According to Egyptian media reports, the extremists launched an attack on the Al-Rada Mosque in the town of Bir el-Abd, some 25 miles from the North Sinai provincial capital of El Arish. Egypt's state news agency reported the attack appeared to be the latest by the area's local Islamic State affiliate. So there was some gunfire, some bombs, apparently all kinds of just terrible stuff going on there. So at least 235 dead, and probably will be rising somewhat. No group immediately claimed responsibility after it happened, but the attack was the largest single targeting of Egyptian civilians and the first on a large mosque congregation since the ISIS affiliate began the campaign of violence against the state following the military's 2013 overthrow of an elected but divisive Islamist president. So trouble there in Egypt after the Arab Spring of a few years ago. We've not seen peace. We've seen just much more volatility in some of these regions.
And that's a huge body count, too, 235 people. It also underscores the fact that that's not an ideology you can coexist with. I mean, again, they attacked a mosque. They attacked a place of Muslim religious worship. It's not like they really are very discriminate against about who they're targets are anymore. They just, if there's a slightly different sect of Islam, they'll attack them. If there were no one left on earth except for Muslims, they would all attack each other. It's not a religion of peace, obviously.
Yeah, so bad situation over there in Egypt. And So 235 dead at this moment. But Egypt's, of course, very volatile. There's a lot you can find on thetrumpet.com about where Bible prophecy indicates Egypt will go in terms of their allies as they move forward. And so there's a lot to look at there in relation to Egypt and the Middle East, volatile region. Of course, right after Thanksgiving is always the Black Friday, and Drudge Report always likes to put up the same headline every year, which is season's beatings.
That's really funny. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess if it works, just keep bringing it back out. So I don't know. There was a few things. This is from the Daily Mirror. Black Friday mayhem. One shot outside Missouri Mall as brawls close Alabama shopping center after stores open their doors early. With experts predicting Americans will splash out $20 billion over the weekend. Who knew everyone was sitting on so much money? They're hiding it in their houses waiting to shop.
And it also seems like, although I don't really know if they have stockpiles of cash, it's probably all debt, but it also seems like Black Friday is starting earlier and earlier. I saw an ad where certain businesses were open all day on Thanksgiving. Some opened at 6 p.m. on Thursday. It's not just Friday. It's obviously opening a lot earlier than that. And then, like you said, going through the whole weekend in a lot of cases.
You know, even what they're doing, people will always think of ways to try to get more or manipulate the system. There are people that were posting on Twitter and so forth that they used to work, in this case, at a Walmart, and they kept their vest from when they worked there, even though they don't work there anymore. And so they were bragging online about how they were going to go into the store with the vest, pretend to be an employee, skip the lines, get in early, and then just start shopping. So I don't know if that would work. I mean, that obviously it's dishonest. And then somebody was trying to sell theirs. Somebody had some from when they used to work. I think it was at a Walmart. They were selling them. They had three vests for $100 a piece, so people could get in ahead of time, supposedly. So I'm sure that's illegal. And they're posting this online, so if anyone cared to make a deal out of it, they obviously would know who they are.
Well, is that even common practice for a store to let its own employees just start shopping before the store's open?
No.
I've never heard of anything like that before.
No, you can't shop when you're on the clock. I know that for sure, because I used to work retail when I was a teenager. And yeah, I mean, now, in one sense, if you've got the little outfit, maybe that would be help you, but they would typically know who the employees are.
Right.
Like, well, who is this guy? I don't recognize this guy. So I don't know that would work at all, but it just shows what people are trying to do to get in and get their bargains early, apparently. But there's, as mentioned here, a few skirmishes. One person shot outside a Missouri mall as hordes of shoppers fought each other for Black Friday deals. A brawl broke out in Alabama Mall, leaving medics to attend to an injured man as the store shut its doors. Stores across the U.S. opened their doors early, as you mentioned, to thousands of bargain hunters at 5 p.m. on Thanksgiving Day in some cases. You're not even through dinner yet.
Exactly. It's terrible.
The football games are still going on. You're out there shopping. Shoppers have braved cold weather to stand in line, but others skip lines by dressing as store employees, as mentioned. Estimated 164 million people are planning to shop or are considering shopping during Thanksgiving weekend. And if you can't get enough of that, you got Cyber Monday coming around the corner, too, where you can get everything online cheaper, apparently.
Yeah, I guess a good way to counteract those people trying to scam the stores is to just know who your employees are, and if you see them in the store early, just start getting some free labor out of them. Start telling them to perform tasks around the store. What are they going to do? I mean, they're pretending to be a worker. They can't refuse it, right?
That's true. Some people will accidentally work the first day of their lives and find out that they love it. I love working here. This is great.
Why have I not tried this before?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Can you get fired if you don't really work there? You're fired. I don't even work here. Yeah. So people are trying all kinds of things. Anyway, some of that going on out there, and customers said they're going to spend an average of $967.13. That's very specific.
Wow.
This year, according to Prosper Insights and Analytics. So how much you plan to spend this year? About $967.13. People are budgeting, apparently.
They've got an envelope
with yeah,
exactly that amount in it.
It's exactly what I had in there. But anyway, there's a write-up on the Trumpet about how, again, a lot of people are still paying debt from last year. and now pile on more this year. So obviously, and you know, not everybody's going to spend that much, but you know, some people are going to spend a whole lot more.
Oh yeah. I mean, if that's the average, and there are probably a lot of people just buying one or two things on Black Friday, then you know that there's people spending many thousands. I don't know many people who just have that extra money lying around outside of savings or your monthly bills. And so if people are doing that, then they're probably going into a ton of debt.
Easy to do. There's a write-up here. It says the psychology of Black Friday. Of course, there's a whole psychology to get people to buy things. Scientists reveals how limiting sales influences pride and regret, causing people to spend more. So they're targeting those two, I guess you'd call them, emotions. They say fear of future regret, such as missing a bargain, influences people's decision-making. Oh, if I don't get it now, I'm going to miss out. This fear outweighs any regret, they say, people feel in participating in some of these sales. And if the price of the item went up after it was bought at a discount, it's likely to result in pleasure and pride, increasing chances of participating in sales again. Mm-hmm. Well, look, the price went up. I'm the smart shopper here. I've observed over the years, and I think this is probably part of it, that things are put on the market and they're really expensive, whatever it might be. And you think, wow, that's really pricey. And then the big sale comes along and you think, whoa, you know, half off. I think that's probably what the going price would be anyway. And even then it's marked up. And I feel like the rest of it's just there to like make you feel like you're getting a better deal because you've been looking at this higher price the whole time. And so there's a whole psychology to it.
Yeah, there are a whole lot of traps to getting people to buy. And you have to credit the retailers for doing what they're doing to attract customers. That is their whole job, is to make sales. But obviously, customers need to be attuned to that and understand exactly how they're being manipulated. You know, it's a good idea to just write down what you want, save up the money for it, and then go buy it and not be wandering the stores just looking for deals and then snatching up all these extra things that you never needed.
Well, they say, too, that it's much harder to spend actual cash than it is put something on credit, because there is even the psychology of it. There's something more difficult about handing over the money, especially if all you have is what's in your wallet or your purse. And you think, boy, do I really want to give this money for that? Because I don't want to, you know, spend all my money. But when it's a credit card, you don't have the same exact feeling about it. And so that can be a real trap, too, because it's so easy. Or now people pay with their phones, or, you know, there's all sorts of ways to pay. So you don't see cash that much. Matter of fact, occasionally if I'm at a store and I pay with cash, you can see almost this moment of panic in the person doing the exchange, or not the exchange, but doing the transaction. Like, what do I do with this money? And, you know, and they got to make change, and they seem like they would prefer not to.
Right. They have to find the button to even open the cash register because it's so rare that they ever use it. And then, of course, they have to figure out the exact change. And if it doesn't pop up on the screen, well, then you have to do it in your head, which is a pressure-filled situation sometimes. So, yeah, people would obviously rather use that magical little card and swipe it through. And like you said, people are using phones now and flashing them up there. And all the phone has to do is get near the little scanner, and you've already paid for it. So that's another psychological tool, isn't it? Just paying at the snap of your fingers, basically throwing that money away before you've even really thought about it.
And then, of course, online shopping is, you know, it's very easy as well. Just click the button. It seems to not have the pain associated with losing cash until the bill comes due. I think a lost art form today is handing money to people in a proper way. I'm really particular about this, I guess, because I was brought up this way. But like, biggest bill on the bottom, all the way up to the smallest bill, all facing up, all the right way, handed to somebody. And I've had people just like basically give me a ball of money, you know, and I'm trying to flip the bills around and get them all the right direction and stuff. So I think that's a lost art form today. But that's one thing, that's a pet peeve of mine, when they're not in the right order or facing the right direction.
I completely agree. There's definitely an etiquette to that is being trampled upon now. People don't care about how they hand the money to you. Probably in some cases people are a little bit angry that they're handing over money, and so they'll give it to you in as much of a jumbled mess as possible.
It's got to be in order, because when you open your wallet, you want to see exactly what you have and be able to like go through it. And so, although if they're out of order and you have a bigger bill than you thought, that can be a pleasant surprise.
True.
But that's something that, just different ways of doing things these days. This is a very important time for the economy in terms of some retail stores. a lot of people buying things online these days. Retail stores, brick and mortar stores, as they call them, are having some struggles. And so this is make or break for a lot of retailers, whether it be online or the physical stores. Even J. Crew, I think, is shutting a certain percentage of their physical locations. So it's very interesting because you have all this mall real estate. Some of these stores are having a harder time. And so this whole sort of retail bubble is happening. There's still sales on the internet, of course, but then what do you do with all these stores that are closing?
Right. It's almost like a battle or a rush to evolve because people are finding more and more convenient ways to purchase things where they don't even have to dress up and leave the house anymore because they can just do it online. Then they find certain websites that have outrageous discounts because maybe the products are made overseas at a huge discount there. It's really difficult for companies to keep up with selling goods at a competitive rate, but also of a high quality and in such an easy way that people will do it over and over again. You can understand why a lot of companies would be worried about something like that.
Yeah, and the variety you can find on the internet. I mean, you can find if they make it, you can find it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're just relying on your local store, it's going to be limited as to what you can get there. So changing times for sure. Here's an interesting write-up from Yahoo today. Cyber war is our era's Cuban Missile Crisis, it says. We need to de-escalate now. Well, good luck. You're not going to de-escalate that. They say in October, a report surfaced that hackers linked to North Korea targeted American electric utilities. The ability to impact national critical infrastructure by either taking it offline or weaponizing it constitutes a very real threat, but with a significant difference from the Cuban Missile Crisis, the enemy is unknown and the path to resolution is unclear. So they're making this comparison with the Cuban Missile Crisis where you knew the missiles are in Cuba, you know Russia's involved, Cuba's involved, you know who to talk to. Cyber warfare, sometimes they don't know where it's coming from. Often they don't know where it's coming from, at least initially. Who do you talk to stop it? Even if it comes from Russia, you know, well, did the Russian government do it? Or are these some teenagers in, you know, in Moscow? There's a lot of unknowns there, but we are so dependent on, you know, things working. Well, even what was it? The LA Transit system got hacked the other day. I mean, it could be a real danger.
And it has been an issue of much contention here in America. We've shown ourselves to be extremely vulnerable to cyber attacks. Even the last election was marred by accusations of the Russians hacking the Democratic National Committee, although it seemed like there was a sort of a program used to make it look like it was coming from Russia when maybe it wasn't. So we're still not sure who did that. But that's just how sophisticated hackers are, and again, they're rushing to evolve, just like we were talking about in the last story. They have to stay a few steps ahead of the people trying to stop them, and so they're always getting more and more creative with their different traps, their different tactics. It's really difficult for national governments to keep up with that.
Yeah, and we're so dependent on all sorts of technology that if it were to go down for any period of time, we're kind of like, what do we do? It says, when it comes to traditional warfare, there is an understood set of norms, a code of conduct between nation states. These norms give the system predictability, which leads to stability. In the cyber world, the impacts are significant, but the code of conduct and the consequences for bad behavior haven't been defined yet. The concept of cyber attack is not even clearly defined by the U.S. government, much less our potential enemies. And this lack of definitions and standards of conduct means that it is impossible to predict how a target will react or respond to a cyber attack. So, like you said, it's an evolving situation. They said this summer we learned that the notion of a cyber attack against nuclear infrastructure within the U.S. is truly a practical reality. According to the New York Times, since May 2017, hackers have been penetrating the computer networks of companies that operate nuclear power stations and other energy facilities, as well as manufacturing plants in the U.S. and other countries. Among the companies impacted was the Wolf Creek Nuclear Operating Corporation, which runs a nuclear power plant near Burlington, Kansas. Further reporting revealed that the U.S. government believed that the Russians were behind this and other attacks. So people are poking around in the systems. They know that, I guess. And it's just a matter of what are people going to do and when are they going to do it, and can we stop them before they do?
Yeah, and that's a really great point about just how there aren't any standards of conduct for cyber warfare, especially if you can't even pinpoint who's doing it. That's why terrorism works so well. It's not necessarily two nations with defined boundaries going against each other. A terrorist cell could be anywhere within someone else's nations. Maybe a state sponsors it, but they don't usually carry out the terrorist acts themselves. So it's like a really mysterious, unexpected way of attacking. So is cyber warfare. That's why it's so effective. And literally, you could just be sitting in your house hacking somebody if you have the skills. You don't have to be affiliated with any huge, powerful government.
You know, I got an email the other day, and I'm sure it was a scam, but it was kind of different than what I've seen before. It was from a retailer that I don't shop at, but my wife does, so it kind of threw me off just a touch. But it said, thanks for your order, and something else. And I thought, well, I didn't, or it was an order confirmation or something like that. I thought, well, I didn't order anything. So I asked her. She said, no, she didn't. And I looked at the email, and I don't know, like, there was nothing about it necessarily that was suspicious except for one thing. Well, two things. One is I didn't order anything. So I thought, well, maybe somebody, like, compromised one of my credit cards or something. But they did, I couldn't find any evidence of that. But the only thing that threw me off is they said, click, you know, here for your confirmation number. But usually if you order something, there's actually a number. This was just a undefined link. Like, it just said, click here.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's unusual. I didn't order anything. Everything looks to be normal. This is a scam of some kind. But it looked to come from like a retailer that I would use or my wife would use. And so I thought, yeah, boy, they're just developing these scams more and more, because I'm sure if you click on that, it, you know, redirects you to something. Who knows what goes on there. So you just really have to kind of pay attention. And we're not, you know, most people like myself, we're not cyber experts, but just kind of thinking, well, that seems odd. That can save you from a lot of trouble.
And think if you had bought something from that retailer recently, how easy might it have been to click on that? So it does take a lot of, I guess, discernment to make sure that it's not a fake or a fraud. And sometimes I get emails like that, but I already know that I've ordered it. I already know that I've paid for it. I already know that it's on its way. And so sometimes I just ignore those emails, just because what's the point of getting the confirmation number when I've already completed the transaction and the item is on its way to me?
Yeah, you just have to be really careful. I mean, whether it's smaller things like that where you could have a financial, you know, problem, or national problems like hacking nuclear facilities and so forth. It's a serious issue. There's a lot of good write-ups on thetrumpet.com about some of those items and over the years, because it is a big concern. There are prophecies that talk about, you know, the call going out for war, but nobody answers it. And some good indication there that would be a cyber-related situation. So you can check those out at thetrumpet.com. Speaking of thetrumpet.com, top story today is Fake Hate Crimes Pose Real Threat by Andrew Miller. I'm really glad he wrote about this, because I've been seeing these pop up in the headlines last few years. Really, there's one just recently that I saw where all this stuff was written, and it would appear to be a, as they would say, white supremacist. They go and they discover it, and it turns out it was actually, you know, in the cases I'm thinking, it was actually a black individual writing anti-black sentiment, trying to stir up trouble, apparently, and that's happened in multiple occasions.
And wasn't there an issue like that? I think it was in the Air Force recently. So even in a place like that, where there's so much discipline, so much structure, obviously you have a unifying team goal. There's still people going around trying to divide and trying to stir up drama that there shouldn't be. I mean, talk about pet peeves. That's one of mine, because there's no purpose to something like that except to draw media attention to it and stir up hostility against a different group of people.
Yeah, Andrew Miller says here that American society equates victimhood with power to the point where people are committing crimes against themselves. And then we see that happening. It says, for the first time in a century, Kansas State University closed its doors during the school year for something other than bad weather. All classes from 1 to 3 were canceled on November 14th for a K-State Unity Walk and a KSU Unite Rally. Students, faculty, and staff left their classrooms, dorms, and offices to rally against racism. The events were organized after a Jewish student's sukkah, a temporary hut used during the festival of Sukkot, was knocked over and a black student's car was defaced with racist graffiti. Well, it turns out, though, that the sukkah was damaged by storms, not vandals, and the car was defaced by the owner, the 21-year-old black owner, as a Halloween prank, apparently. So that's interesting. You know, there are people that are pretty messed up and they like to start fires, pyromaniacs, I guess. And I've heard that they like to do that because they like the excitement and the drama that comes around it. And like firefighters and everybody. And I wonder if it's similar like this. Like, oh, let's see if we can get everybody rallying and protesting and yelling. And you know, they just like the excitement. That's why they do it or something.
Yeah, except for that the idea of vandalizing your own property really is inconceivable. I mean, if you play out that arsonist analogy, he'd have to burn his own house down just to make a statement. You know, it's insane. Why would you vandalize your own vehicle if you had all these other vehicles to pick from of other people who you knew were also black? I mean, I guess they really are committed to the cause if they're willing to sacrifice their own property.
Well, and I suppose you would avoid getting into trouble. I mean, you can damage your own car, I guess. That's okay. I mean, it's yours. You can do what you want with it. Maybe they're trying to avoid that, too.
I guess there were... I think it was that situation there specifically where they had cameras all over the parking lot, and so he got caught from, like, 20 different angles. I mean, just totally an ignorant, self-harming crime.
This write-up says, despite the fact that the quote-unquote hate crimes that triggered this costly rally never happened... The president of Kansas State University's Black Student Union spoke at the event, saying, "We are hurt, discouraged, and in pain. These incidents cause us to think we are not safe." Yeah, from the guy that defaced his own car. He also mentioned a noose hanging from a tree on campus, even though police said its size and shape left no indication that it was meant to symbolize lynching or anything. And he says, while it should be easy to chalk up this overreaction to youthful naivete, that's a tough word for me. These recent incidents are just the latest in an epidemic of fake hate crimes that have beset America. And, of course, besides just being lying, it can stir up some real crime. It can stir up some real violence to where people say, oh, wow, we've got this problem. And then they start to look at, you know, whatever the other race might be that they feel is persecuting them. And have this hatred and this division stirred up, and it's stirred up over nothing. And so it can turn into a really bad situation.
Well, and we've talked about it before, just how our society is being divided into different groups made to then fight against each other because of media misrepresentation of the facts. And, I mean, even here, why is it that there's a black student union at a college? I mean, I can't imagine there ever being a white student union. And yet, because of certain groups that are minorities that claiming victimhood, I guess they're allowed to have their own unions like that. It just, obviously, when we get to the point where we allow these obvious double standards and we do anything we can to undermine the physical majority in a country, you're stirring up a lot of hatred, a lot of strife. There's not really any reason for it. Obviously, a person's skin color is a really trivial thing. It shouldn't be something that makes us hate each other or go to war against each other in some cases. And yet that's what we're seeing. We're seeing people who are claiming victimhood actually given the power, just like that article brings out. It's only people who say that they are being abused by the system who are then allowed the advantages of having a black student union or whatnot.
Yeah, on a personal level, I was just thinking back to, say, when I was in high school, mostly high school, college a little bit, but I didn't see it as much in college. But there would be a few students that everybody knew they kind of... they didn't get as much attention as others within the social circle. And often there were times with some of them where you could tell they really just wanted attention, whether it was good, bad, or otherwise. And so I do remember people kind of stirring up drama in their own lives, making a scene of some kind or doing something just because I'm sure they wanted the attention. They wanted people to talk and say, oh, did you hear about so-and-so or did you see what happened? And it was always, I think, just because they just weren't happy with themselves. And so I think in a lot of cases, people like this, you know, maybe that's a part of it too. They're just not happy with themselves, their life, their situation. And so when they create this drama, it gives them something to talk about. It gives them the attention that they're seeking. Or again, like it's like Andrew Miller writes here, you know, victimhood is equated with power of some kind, whether it's attention or whether it's, you know, excusing maybe poor behavior. Like, well, they didn't do this or that, but you have to understand they're victims and that type of thing. So it is really a selfish thing at the end of the day, no matter which way it sort of manifests itself.
Yeah, it is really selfish, and it's disappointing as well, because the vast majority of people in this country don't have anything against people who happen to look different from them or who happen to be a different gender or sexual orientation. Those things have become extremely trivial, yet you wouldn't know it because of the way the media constantly is pushing these false narratives like hands up, don't shoot. They give gigantic coverage to every fake hate crime, yet as soon as they're debunked, they don't hardly issue an apology for their wrong coverage in the first place. That those types of deceptions that you see on TV every night are the reason why race has become such a big issue in the country. I mean, there's never been a country with so many positive steps made for race relations in its history as America. Going to war and 600,000 people dying to abolish slavery, civil rights in the 1960s. The minorities in this country are now integrated into society, and yet people are still getting rich off of playing the victim card and trying to stir up these groups of people to basically, I guess, hate white people. I guess that's what it comes down to.
Well, it's, it's interesting point there about the fact that when, like in the case of the person brought up in this article here by Andrew Miller, the 21-year-old that vandalized his own car to try to stir up trouble. and now they said it was a Halloween prank, maybe, I'm not sure. But with these other people that have been caught stirring it up, I have not seen one story where they even really talk about it. But then secondly, why don't you bring that person on and give them the grilling, give them the big interview and say, why did you do this? What's your motivation for this? That would have been an interesting thing to see. I'm sure they wouldn't have wanted to be on there. But again, you know, like you said, once it's found out that it's not what they think it was, the media then buries it because it doesn't, I guess, fit the narrative or whatever, and you just don't hear much about it. But it would be interesting to bring those people on and say, well, what's your life like? Like, why would you do this? And what's your, where did you get the idea to do this? And then, of course, they'd say, I learned it by watching you to the media. but you just don't hear that. But I would actually be very interested to hear, okay, well, why did you feel like this was something you wanted to do?
Yeah, I think a while ago I made the kind of a radical suggestion that these types of people be forced as a punishment to go on TV and show their reasoning, their rationale for why they're doing things like this, especially because, I mean, that's a potentially really harmful act because people retaliate. They get stirred up emotionally when they see these fake hate crimes, and they will then attack people who they think are part of the group that perpetrated the crime. So whenever there's, you know, people's lives at risk because of someone acting foolish like that, they should be forced to answer for it and maybe even face a little bit of humiliation just because of the way that they are hurting the entire country.
Yeah, it does seem like there certainly is a little bit of legal ramification there because, you know, if you were to cause a riot, you are accountable for the damage done there. That even happens sometimes to music singers or bands, you know, where the concert gets out of control, and they, a lot of times they're somewhat responsible for it, or at least they try to make them pay for it. I mean, in the cases where people have done something like this, and if something gets going and there's a little bit of back and forth and damage done because of it, well, they're actually guilty for it. I don't know what happens there. Maybe they do go find them. I haven't heard anything like that, but sometimes some of these protests have got out of hand. And I think they've gone back and found out, it wasn't what they thought it was, that it was whoever put the graffiti up, they were doing it to incite trouble.
Yeah, and I did hear a little bit about that instance where that man vandalize his own car. And even if you do it to yourself, it is a crime. Yeah, I mean, apparently the police said it was a crime, but he acted foolishly, didn't really know what he was doing, and so we'll let him off the hook. And so it's like, okay, but there's no punishment here. Hmm. No one is realizing because of paying for a crime that they actually did something wrong. You just get a slap on the wrist and get to go about living your life. And I can't imagine it being that lenient if it had been, you know, someone white doing the same thing, because the climate in the country is to blame them immediately and not give the benefit of the doubt.
That's interesting. A lot of legal questions there. Fake hate crimes pose real threat. That's by Andrew Miller. It's at thetrumpet.com. Stop and check that out today. Related to that, another write-up, the real agenda behind Black Lives Matter. So some good related content there. Trumpet Daily Radio Show coming up this weekend. Richard Palmer today filling in for Stephen Fleury. Make sure you listen for that. And a brand new Key of David program this weekend. The world's greatest empire is hidden. The greatest empire in the world today prefers to remain hidden, which is unusual. But it will impact the whole earth soon. So make sure that you do check that out at the trumpet.com. You can watch it there. Also on television this weekend and here on KPCG. So really good program there. And I guess we'll leave it a secret as to what empire that is, if people don't know.
Yeah, we'll just say it. Obviously, it is different from empires historically that have flaunted their power and their might and their culture. You're not really seeing that right now too much on the world scene. And so that does leave people to wonder who is going to be the next dominant power. They're building up behind the scenes.
Yeah, really great program that you need to see this weekend. Before we get into a historical note, there's an invention that they're working on, which I think is kind of interesting. It could be neat, but it also sounds terrifying. This is elevators that move beyond up and down. So I was in a hotel a couple of weeks ago, and they had two elevators, and one of them wasn't working. So it was a log jam every time. So I was thinking about elevators. But they're inventing a new one, potentially. It says, what if elevators could move sideways instead of just up and down? It's a question straight out of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, they say. Germany-based Tyson Krupp, however you say it, has a real-life answer. Multi. It's a system of elevators that ditches old-school pulleys for the same magnetic levitation tech that enables high-speed trains. Are you nervous yet? The elevator cars can travel in multiple directions and even pass each other within a shaft. Features that could not only reduce wait times but also fundamentally change how buildings are constructed. So they're hoping to get some of these going. The first is set to debut in Berlin in 2021. I don't know. I'd have to see it. Like, how does that? Why would I want to go forward and backwards? I guess just so I don't have to walk down the corridor.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's not really the most difficult thing. Just to walk down the hall, walk, you know, horizontally instead of vertically.
Yeah.
Going up the stairs 30 flights can be a little bit daunting sometimes, but just walking down the hall doesn't seem nearly as bad. However, I guess that idea does kind of strike me as exciting. I kind of would just prefer to have more elevators in a lot of these hotels. One time I had to wait literally 10 minutes for an elevator just because the hotel was so crowded. Why is it that you only have four elevators when you have thousands of people staying here? There should be a lot more.
Yeah, right. And if there's an emergency, of course you shouldn't take the elevator anyway, but yeah, how do you get out of those places?
Yeah.
That's interesting. So anyway, they're thinking about that. Elevators are, I don't know how those trains work. So I would feel like I would need to know more about that, mm-hmm. the elevated trains, because I always think, like, what if it stops working? Like, how does it stop working? I understand the pulley system. If it breaks, that's how it stops working.
Right.
Or it doesn't move up and down. But I don't know how this other one works, so I'd have to find out more, I guess.
Yeah, there's definitely some uncertainty there. It's an intriguing idea. Obviously, you'd want to make sure you gave it quite a few test runs before you made it a reality. And like that said, it's going to take a change in constructing the buildings even.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it goes once they finally update buildings to even be able to hold those things.
It'd be confusing with the buttons. Usually you just go up and down. You'd have to push like a,
right.
There'd be some sort of representation for forward and backward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I don't like the idea of them passing each other.
In the same corridor. Yeah, that is kind of scary.
Interesting. Well, the trains are nice in a lot of those areas, so maybe they'll do something with that. Here's an interesting thing that happened on this day in history. In 1859, Charles Darwin, the British naturalist, published On the Origin of Species. It was the paper in which he explained his theory of evolution through the process of natural selection. He concluded one of his works with this quote. He said, he had sort of this paradox, I guess, with thinking about man. He said, man with all his noble qualities, with sympathy, which feels for the most debased, with benevolence, which extends not only to other men, but to the humblest living creature, with his godlike intellect, which has penetrated into the movements and the constitution of the solar system, with all these exalted powers, man still bears in his bodily frame the indelible stamp of his lowly origin. He couldn't put the two together. He's like, well, we think and we have all these emotions and these feelings and these thoughts and ideas, but yet we're still these physical beings, and he couldn't put the two together.
What an impact Charles Darwin made on the world, even if he didn't know he was going to. I mean, obviously, a lot of people use his writing now to try to discredit God and say evolution is true, even though he himself was not sure of his own hypothesis. And like you said, he saw that there was a gigantic gulf between physical human beings and yet their capabilities that go far beyond any other animal. That it just shows that obviously we're not animals, but he couldn't see spirit in his research, and so of course he did not include that possibility.
Yeah, and he had some religious training, and his wife did as well, but they just, the more they looked at it, they couldn't understand it. It didn't make sense because they didn't understand the truth. And so, and then he observed, you know, the world around him, and he was trying to make this stuff fit together. He said, or they wrote about him, that though he thought of religion as a tribal survival strategy, Darwin was reluctant to give up the idea of God as an ultimate lawgiver. He was increasingly troubled by the problem of evil. And that was another thing that he saw. I thought, well, why is there evil in the world? And so he couldn't put these things together. And so it's amazing how, obviously he was bright in certain ways as far as certain observations and things, but he didn't understand the Bible. He didn't understand God's truth. And so he tried to make it fit the best he could. And it's amazing that people would buy that and say, oh, well, this guy must have it figured out. He was very conflicted. He couldn't quite put all the pieces together.
In a way, you do have to admire someone who asked the bigger questions in life, and he did admit that he was confused by a lot of it. Probably, though, the most damage from his writings came from those who followed after him and tried to distort scientific findings to fit into his evolutionary theory. Charles Darwin himself openly admitted, again, that he was confused. He didn't know it all. He had some interesting research, but then you have these charlatans who come along after him, like Haeckel, who actually just twist any sort of skeleton or embryo that they research into the evolutionary theory. And that's where it gets dishonest. That's where science has really leaped off the rails. It's not about examining our environment and coming up with a true or a viable hypothesis anymore. It's about distorting whatever you find into your preconceived notions.
Yeah, Darwin said the thing that probably would describe him the best was agnostic. He just didn't know.
Yeah.
And like you said, he asked some really good questions, but he couldn't find the answer. He looked for the answer to spiritual questions in the physical world, and he can't find it. You can't observe, you know, creatures and figure out why man has evil, but why man also can do some really good things and has this incredible mind. You know, those are really good questions, and he just never found the satisfactory answer to them. But people bought his books,
right?
and so he did have some good observations. But there again, you look at the foundation of modern education and so many things, and it gets back to that religious theory, which of course is just a theory because it's not true and it's not provable in any way. But you look at the author of that, and I guess he would be credited the most, although others had some ideas there too. But Darwin was a confused person. He was conflicted, and he could never find the answers he was really looking for.
It would be really nice if every scientist who ever followed after him would ask the exact same questions that Charles Darwin did. If they really took the time to think about, why are humans so much more capable than animals? Why can we do such great things, like you said, but also such evil things? What is the cause of all that? If every scientist considered those questions, realized there was absolutely no physical evidence in the entire universe to explain it, then at some point they'd have to look to the Bible. But it just seems like now most scientists after Darwin have not considered those questions like they should, because it's too confounding, it's too confusing, and it does take humility to finally turn to the Bible in science.
Yeah, and if listeners are familiar with the writings of Herbert W. Armstrong, I mean, he asked those similar questions, but he was able to find the answers in the Bible after studying both evolution and the Bible. And also, too, I mean, in some of his great works, Mr. Armstrong's works, you know, he asked those questions. Okay, well, why this paradox? Like, why is there so much knowledge? Why have we advanced so far in terms of human knowledge production, but yet there's a lot of evils, too? Like, those are really good questions. And those are questions where when it comes up and it really rears its ugly head, like, say, in a church shooting or something like that, like we've seen, in a lot of cases, the theologians just say, well, you know, God's a mystery, because they just don't have the answers to those things. But the answers are there in the Bible if their minds are open to it. But also, if they care to look and investigate somewhat, too, they can begin to at least see some of it on some level.
Right. And the difference between what scientists are trying to do, removing all spiritual possibilities from their field, and what the Bible is capable of, is that scientists can't, and they will tell you this, they can't understand or explain the first cause. They can't explain what caused the first tiny particle that then must have exploded and somehow created the entire universe. There's no way to get back to a point where nothing existed and then all of a sudden something existed. And some of them then have to concede, well, we just don't know. The difference with the Bible, though, is that you can actually prove everything the Bible says based on archaeology, based on prophecy. There are a whole lot of different ways to prove it. The fact that there's no contradictions in the entire book, despite it being written by, what was it, 40 authors or something like that. Those are some pretty high levels of proof that scientists just can't find because they're not considering the spiritual element.
And the idea of evolution as being the way things are, move forward, or that they're happening, it's amazing how people would accept that in a lot of cases, but then they would accept also the social changes, you see, which fly in the face of even their own theories. Mm. Because if it's all about survival of the fittest, how come what's being put forward now is human behavior that would lead to the destruction of mankind?
Right.
Like, there is only one way for humans to reproduce, and there are a lot of societal changes there where there are pairings where people cannot.
Exactly.
You know, just some logic and some common sense would tell you, well, if it's all about survival of the fittest and adaptation, all of those sorts of things, how come society is going the opposite direction from that?
Yeah, the fact that we can't reconcile science, cold hard evidence, with the way that society is going, and the fact that these scientists are going along with that, it just gets back to rebellion, doesn't it? It's all about not submitting to a supreme creator, because these scientists know that physically there's no other way for the universe to exist right now unless something not physical caused it at the very start. They know that, like you said, survival of the fittest would go completely contrary to a lot of the societal changes, but what does that mean? It means that there's a creator God who has laws, and it means that whatever's in the Bible, you have to actually obey it. That's the difficult part. That's the part where humans just haven't come to the point where they're willing to open up their minds to that yet.
Yeah, just Genesis 1, 26 and 27, you know, this is so great. God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him, image and likeness, of course, and then he created them male and female. That answers a lot of questions. You know, yeah, like the question that Darwin had. Well, how can we have this like mind that can do these godlike things? That's his words, godlike. But yet, you know, physically we're not like that. We live and die like an animal does. Well, God created us in his image, physical, like God in thinking, well, in potential, but physical bodies. You know, why is that? Well, it's because there's a plan for mankind. And that's what we've been talking about this week, this booklet, God is a Family. And it explains all of this in detail. Of course, Mystery of the Ages gets into that, the incredible human potential, in a lot more detail even. But this booklet talks about it too. And just that God is creating a family, but he's wanting us to use this physical life to learn to think like him and act like him, not like the monkey at the zoo, but like the God that created us. And then after this physical life, then what? Birth into the God family. This physical body doesn't last forever, but we're developing the character that can last forever.
Yeah, and you mentioned not acting like monkeys at the zoo. Scientists have compared the human mind or the human brain to the monkey brain, and they're actually extremely similar. So why is it that whenever they're looking at the brain, nothing is different, or at least nothing substantial is different in any way? Well, it's because there's a spiritual element in the human mind, and that's what makes it a human mind and not just a human brain. People commonly say, you know, this is the best of that the human spirit is capable of. People use that as a common expression, but I guess not enough people think, why is it that humans have a spirit and we're not talking about like a dolphin spirit or a dog spirit? It's a human spirit that makes humans capable of way, 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 way more than animals. There has to be a reason for that. There has to be a deeper meaning to it than just, oh, well, we just happen to be different. That there's more to it than that.
Right. That is the unseen answer to things, is the spiritual truth of the matters. Because like you said, I mean, if you look at just the physical human, or you look at the physical brain of a human, it's not that different than certain animals. So what makes it different? How come we're different? And, you know, it's amazing, too, if you look at like some tricks that animals can perform. People are amazed by it sometimes. Like, look at this trick it's doing. But if it was a human doing it, it'd be like, well, what's wrong with that guy? You know, because it's the most basic sort of thing. There is definitely a different plane of thinking that mankind is on. But again, that's because God has a purpose for man. And that's why it's such a tragedy when you see people not using their minds and dumbing down, really, their behavior in themselves to kind of like almost going back to the way an animal would live in a lot of cases, instead of elevating our thinking and our minds to live like God lives, which is what he wants us to do.
Yeah, the inspiring part about the human mind is that it's capable of combining with God's Holy Spirit, the human spirit and the Holy Spirit combining, and then, of course, making possible spiritual life at the right time. And so when people try to do their own thing, alter their minds with drugs or other substances or destructive behaviors, what they're doing is they're running away from what their eternal future is if they want to go that route. That they're just totally destroying the beautiful mind that God gave them.
Yeah, besides just the physical destruction that some of those things do to people, it cuts them off from their potential and the way God wants us to think. This booklet gets into a lot of these details. The title is God is a Family, and it goes, the first part talks about just showing that God's a family, and then the second part of the book talks about the Holy Spirit, which is a great mystery to people. But again, that is something that can combine with the human spirit and get us to start thinking like God does. It says here, talking about just the family, the God family, and it's kind of giving a conclusion to the first part of the book. It says, you have seen the terms father and son are used hundreds of times in the New Testament alone. You can look that up in any concordance. The terms son of God, children of God are also found in the New Testament on numerous occasions. We have seen that the saints are called sons, just as Christ is called the Son of God. We have seen that there is a husband and a wife relationship between Christ and the church, and you can see a lot more about that in this booklet, and or the first fruits. Father, son, husband, bride, wife, children, all family. And is it any surprise that God is a family? What a shock that people don't talk about that more. Look at the terms that are used in the Bible.
Yeah, and another way of looking at it, God is spirit, so if he's calling us his sons, wouldn't we be spirit at some point eventually as well, not just physical beings anymore? You know, when dogs have puppies, they're smaller dogs. They don't somehow pop out cats, right? They would obviously be reproducing after their own kind. God's kind is spirit. That's the type of family we'd be born into. And again, it is a family. There is every single component of a family in it, and scriptures throughout the Bible describe that.
Yeah, and people get confused on what it means to be born again, and Christ explained that very clearly. You know, when he was asked about it, he said, "Yeah, you have to be born again to be in the kingdom of God." And the fellow was like, "How do you? Well, how do you do that? I mean, can you go and be born a second time, like from your mom?" He was thinking physically, and Christ said, "No." He's like, "You know, when you're physical, you're physical, but when you're spirit, your spirit's like the wind. You know, it blows, but nobody can see it other than see what it does. I guess that's what it's like to be spirit. So." Unless you're that, haven't been born again.
Exactly. It's a birth. It's a transformation into a spiritual being. It's not just the kingdom is in your heart. You're born again now just because you've had a sprinkling of water on your head. It's a literal transformation from physical into spiritual.
Yeah, and it's all in this, a lot of it's in this great little booklet, God is a Family, and it goes through and proves out that truth. And then, of course, there's a lot more at thetrumpet.com. about that as well, and of course it's not the common teaching, although it should be, of religions. So you know, it might be something that's new if you haven't looked at it before, but really worth taking a look at. Also, make sure you listen for the Key of David program, new one this weekend, Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and the Trumpet Hour Week in Review coming up as well. That's all the time we have for this week on Trumpet Radio Live. Hopefully you have a wonderful weekend. Thanks for spending some time with myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon. And we enjoyed talking to you, and we'll see you again next week.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.